If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn and I'm your host. I have a very special guest on this today for this episode. His name is Brandon Steiner. I'm sure if you're in the sports world, you certainly have heard that name for sure. I met Brandon about 28 years ago when I was working at Cantor Fitzgerald. He just started his business and he helped us along the way with tickets to sporting events and arranging for some of our guys to meet some sports stars, sports celebrities. But this is, let's talk about a little bit about Brandon. As a poor kid in Brooklyn, Brandon Steiner lived for the summer days when he could scrounge together enough change to make the subway trip to Yankee Stadium, buy the cheapest ticket available, and bask in the aura of his favorite baseball team for a few hours. Little could Brandon have known then that one day his name would be linked with the team in an exclusive memorabilia partnership that he'd owned some very valuable pieces from that very stadium. In 1987, Brandon established Steiner Associates, later renamed Steiner Sports, with only $4,000, a one-room office, and an intern. By the late 90s, Steiner Sports had dozens of employees and represented most of the big-name athletes in New York. It was about the same time that the company expanded its business focus to include marketing collectible items. Brandon's unprecedented partnership with the New York Yankees, announced in 2004, provided a way to offer fans authentic Yankees memorabilia and one-of-a-kind fantasy experiences at Yankee Stadium. In 2008, Brandon created yet another unique market for itself by purchasing the exclusive rights to major portions of the soon-to-be-disassembled old Yankee Stadium so that Steiner Sports can develop an entire authentic stadium product line that will provide fans with once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to take home seats, signs, bricks from Monument Park, and hundreds of other unique pieces which gave the old stadium its storied history. Brandon has become a media personality as a regular guest on 98.7 FM ESPN New York Radio and co-host of the YES Network's Yankees Steiner Memories of the Game series. He is frequently utilized as an expert commentator on sports and marketing on national news networks, including CNBC, CNN, MSNBC, and ESPN, and in newspapers, including the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. He also made several appearances on MLB TV Network while promoting the MLB Fan Cave. Brandon is the author of three books, Living on Purpose, Stories About Faith, Fortune, and Fitness That Will Lead You to an Extraordinary Life. You Gotta Have Balls, How a Kid from Brooklyn Started from Scratch, Bought Yankee Stadium, and Created a Sports Empire. And last but not least, The Business Playbook, Leadership Lessons from the World of Sports. Brandon resides in Scarsdale, New York with his wife, Mara, and their two children. He bleeds Syracuse orange, and of great joy to him are the weekly basketball games he hosts at his home for his employees and friends. Please help me welcome Brandon Steiner. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm great. Everything's good. Boy, keep going on that intro, man. You got it all covered.
Yeah.
The most important thing is I'm not at Steiner anymore. Steiner's not at Steiner.
Oh, really?
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I left Steiner and I started a new company, Collectible Exchange. And then in 2 weeks, we are launching, beginning of April, I should say, Athlete Direct is a website you can buy directly from players themselves. And then Collectible Exchange is like a better form of eBay where you can sell and buy some of the coolest collectibles. It's just really, really cool site with about 50,000 items on there already and growing rapidly. So new company, new game.
Wow.
Steiner was great, but this is better, you know, and I'm just feeling it.
What I'm thinking is there's no keeping Steiner down.
Well, why? I mean, you got this beautiful gift of a life that, you know, you get put here and I've done some really amazing things. I'm grateful to be a part of with some amazing people, and I just enjoy keep going and I'm having fun doing it. When I stop having fun, I'll stop doing it, but I don't want to let a little bump in the road like a virus or, you know, I thought the Steiner, I'd kind of done everything I could do with that company, but I had a different view about what I want to do with collectibles and marketing, and now I'm able to do it with a much freer rein.
That's great. Well, I got to tell you that is one incredible resume. All right. And congrats on everything that you've accomplished. Now, I have a question. Obviously, growing up, you were a huge Yankee fan. All right. I get it. All right. Did you ever play baseball at any level?
No. I mean, I got chosen in because they needed another guy on softball. I wasn't a very good baseball player. I just went to a batting cage. We did a clinic a month ago with Mariano Rivera, which I was always threatening that I could hit him no problem. Anybody could hit the cutter. And, you know, so I got in the cage and he wasn't even throwing hard. I was hard hitting him. And he's been retired for a bunch of years. But yeah, I mean, I was not a guy that was like, you know, I hurt my arm or I blew out my knee. I was this athlete that almost made it. I was a rec player. I play hard. I enjoy playing sports. You know, I was a decent basketball player, but never on a level that brought any semblance of like, wow, you got to see this guy play.
Wow.
I got to tell you,
funny story. Okay. The rabbi in my synagogue, okay, when he was a young man, he loved baseball and he played. He was a shortstop and he grew up in the Bronx and he was walking. He and a couple of friends of his were walking one day on a not a very safe area. And there are a couple of three or four guys that were looking for trouble and they spotted him and they started to walk towards him. And these guys, you know, the rabbi, he got really, really nervous and they all got really nervous. Then all of a sudden, one of the guys turns and says, "Hey, wait a minute. That's Dave. He's our shortstop. All right. These guys are okay. We can leave them alone."
That's great. Yeah. Sports is something that brings everybody together. And, you know, having been in this business for so long, I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, sports plays such a vital role. Even in this virus, I think it's very courageous what these teams and players have done to fight through and entertain us at a time when there are people that wouldn't even leave their house. So I give them a lot of credit. And then on the other hand, I think that sometimes sports is a little blown out of proportion and we put too much emphasis on it. But I think there's some great learning lessons from sports, which makes it really even more dynamic. And you can use sports as a great tool to show your kid how important it is to work hard, be a team player, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's an interesting industry. You know, when I got into it, it wasn't that big a deal. It's certainly gotten to be a big deal over these last 35 years.
Yeah, for sure. Now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling you what the right thing to do is, and they represent the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. You know, we all know that life is not a straight line. There are many ups and downs and many, many bumps in the road. Now, on the surface, you seem to have had a great life, great career. But as I said, every so often, life throws a curveball at you. Let me ask you this. Life hit us with a brick. And my biggest brick was 9/11. And the whispers helped me through with my miraculous escape. Now, my listeners would like to know, first and foremost, what was the impact of 9/11 on you personally and professionally?
I mean, you know, 9/11 came in the middle of my buyout when I just sold my company. So the first thing that comes to mind is that, you know, I lost a whole bunch of money. I know that sounds selfish, but, you know, I was pretty self-consumed and absorbed with my business and at the peak of earning a lot of money. But it was very dramatic. You know, obviously, you know, Cantor, I had a friend at Cantor who passed. There were friends I knew that passed. And I saw, you know, the city that I grew up in and loved in disarray. I think the good that I got out of 9/11 was that it showed that the power of all of us were better than some of us. It showed that we can get together. And by being nicer and having more empathy is really the trick. And we got that for a while and then we lost it again. Now this virus has kind of brought back the empathy and being kind and grateful. I think gratitude is so important on every level, in every situation. It's got to be one of the ingredients of whatever you're cooking. And I think that sometimes we, as New Yorkers, I can't speak for the rest of the planet, but I know that every religion talks about the importance of being kind and having gratitude. And I think in New York, we get into such a grind. It takes over for the G word as opposed to instead of getting into a higher level of gratitude, because New Yorkers are good people. They're just sometimes we just get so overly intense. And 9/11 really shook us up and shook us down to the point where we all started getting a lot more appreciative for our firemen, for our hospital workers and first responders. And I think that when you get these kinds of transitions of high level adversity, you got to try to find the silver lining and try to have a lot of faith that there will be some good things that will come out of it. And that life is tough, man. It's going to throw you some curveballs and it's not always pretty. And certainly 9/11 was not pretty. And we know that a big change in, you know, how we look at security and a whole bunch of things that we now had to alter our behavior with. So it was dramatic.
I hear. I remember, as you said, you know, New York changed right after 9/11. Everybody was like, flags were flying all over the place. Everybody was nice to each other, kind to each other. The city had totally, totally changed. And as you also said, unfortunately, it lasted for about 6 months. And then after that, it just went right back to what it was before, fortunately or unfortunately. But you're right. In other words, when push comes to shove, New Yorkers are New Yorkers, all right? And they're going to do whatever it takes in order to keep going. And I firmly believe that. And I think you do too.
I think what I've learned about New York is it's like the guy in the desert, you know, he's trekking through the desert and he stumbles upon a rattlesnake. And the rattlesnake says, please, please, the sun's going to go down in about an hour and I'm not well. And if you don't wrap around me and put your coat over me to keep me warm, I'm going to die. And the guy's like, you're a rattlesnake. There's no way I'm doing that. You're going to bite me and you're going to kill me. And the rattlesnake's, no, no, please, please, please. You got to, please don't let me, don't leave me. Wrap me around your body and then put your coat over me so I can live. And finally, the rattlesnake wins over and he wraps the rattlesnake around his body. He puts the blanket in his jacket over him. And the next morning, the guy wakes up and he realizes he's been bitten by the rattlesnake. He says, to the rattlesnake, damn, how could you do that to me? You know, I saved you. I did everything for you to keep you alive and you bite me. And the rattlesnake says, what do you want me to do? I'm a rattlesnake. And you know, at the end of the day, I feel like a little bit, you know, one of the depressing things about New Yorkers is there's nobody more vibrant. There's nobody more gritty. And there's nobody more intense than New Yorkers. But we're New Yorkers. And it's hard to have the empathy and the kindness that you kind of think at some point you want to have more of that you find in other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And you wonder, it's like, do I want to go the distance? At least that's what I think about. Do I want to go the distance living in this insane environment, which has been really lucrative and great for me, but it would be nice to be in a world, in a community and work in a community which is a little bit lighter.
Yeah, I hear you. So let me ask you this. Other than 9/11, what were some of the struggles and or failures, if any, some of the bricks that you got hit with when you were starting out in your career or throughout your career? What was
I mean, there's so many. I mean, I mean, there's so many. And
yeah,
it's just so many bricks. I mean, besides the shots I take that clank when I'm playing basketball, but you know, I mean, it starts when I was 10. I mean, the first brick was even just getting called to the front of the classroom and the teacher gave me an envelope of money and said, you know, it took a collection for you to buy some clothes. I was like, how do you know I need clothes? He said, well, you've been wearing the same pants for 3 weeks in a row. And I said, well, how do you know that? He said, well, you got a rip in the right knee. And I remember the pants distinctly to this day. And it was so humiliating. I went home to my mother and she said, well, you're in between sizes. Of course, we're going to buy you clothes. But when I went back to my room, I was like, you know, something doesn't seem right. Because as a kid, you really don't realize how poor you are. You just know what you know. But I realized we didn't have anywhere near the essentials, clothing, food, wow. You know, it's tight. So I told my mom right then and there, so I'm going to go get a job. Now, for anybody listening, like you have a 10, 11-year-old, just getting him down for breakfast, getting him dressed and brushing his teeth is a chore. I'm getting up and going to work. And I mean, on my own. Out and just going out into the neighborhood in Brooklyn and literally for 6-7 hours going to every store and asking if they need any help. I can't even imagine what that even looked like. A 10-year-old walking into every store on Kings Highway, which is a long street, and saying, hey, you need any help? I'm looking to sweep, clean, deliver. And I did find a job. Freddie the Fruit Man hired me to deliver fruit and vegetables. So that was like my first brick. I mean, you know, there's so many bricks. I mean, even the you know, just thinking back on it, really, when I was almost running out of money in 98 and I went in and I was almost broke and I was at the height, things were starting to pop. And I had this project I was working on. I ran out of money. And then I go to the bank and the guy says, I'll give you a loan. I like your idea. I like you. I had no idea what I was talking about, obviously, but I loved what I was talking about. And I was dealing with a perfect game, David Wells, a 98 Yankee idea, and I was 200,000 short to complete it. And the guy says, well, you have to sign your, you have to take a second mortgage on your house if you want this $200,000 loan. And I was like, turn to my wife and said, we got to get out of here. We're done. And my wife said, no way. Sign that paper. We're fine. I love your idea. And my wife's not even a sports fan, but she believed in me. So sometimes when you hit a brick, or what seems to be a brick, you'd be surprised what comes out of the woodwork that can save you or enter the amount of faith or confidence that you need. So I think sometimes God does give you not always what you want, but I think God can supply you a lot of ways what you need.
Yeah, you know, they always say that God will never give you a challenge that you can't manage. All right. It, you know, and I've seen all kinds of people in, you know, in all kinds of situations, you know, they lost children or, you know, the terminal illnesses and the like. And I look at some of these people and I say, God, I don't know how they get up in the morning. And yet they do. And I said, you know what? Because God gave them something that they can handle. Because I don't know if I could handle that, but they could. And that's why it happened to them, so to speak. So it's amazing. So you did reach a point, from what I'm understanding, you actually reached a point where you said, you know what? I'm done. I quit. I'm not doing this. I don't care about my dreams. Not going to happen. And your wife was the woman with the whispers telling you, no, damn it, sign the damn piece of paper because we're going to do this.
Yeah. I was feeling like maybe we were going to be done.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know where else to get the money, which was very foolish because I probably could have gone 60 ways to Sunday to get the money now when I look back on it, but I didn't know better at the time.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, the people around you are so important to that making sure that they believe in you and making sure that they're to support you. And I wouldn't have had a problem. My wife said, we're not signing that. I think she had every right to say that too. So it was good that she gave me, instilled me that confidence. I remember, you know, when I got fired from Hyatt Hotels, my dream job, I've been there 2.5 years, 3 promotions. And I got into some political problems with a couple of the high level managers and they just did me in. It wasn't because I was doing a bad job, but it didn't matter. So I called my mother up. And my mother was my guru. And I named the second book after her that I wrote 3 books. You Gotta Have Balls was her favorite line. So I call my mother up. I go, can you believe what these people did? You know, I was working like 90 hours a week, killing myself. You know, I'd opened up the hotel down in Inner Harbor in Baltimore. And can you believe what these people did? They screwed me over. And this is not right. And my mother's like, Brandon, Hyatt Hotels is growing leaps and bounds. They're looking for good people. They can't afford to fire good people. Obviously, you're a little rough around the edges. You got some kinks and some things to work out. And give me a shoulder to cry on. And you better start figuring out some of those things you need to improve on. So when you get into these kind of situations, you know how to work through them. And that's when I went to the bookstore. And boy, I was devastated losing this job. It was my dream job, Hyatt. And I went and started picking up every book, self-help book, Harvey McKay, Norman Vincent Peale, Og Mandino, Dale Carnegie, and I'm not a huge reader, but I read every book about how to be better, more positive, how to manage yourself, all those things. And it was my mother, you know, it's like, you know, listen, maybe you ain't as good as you think you are. You know, they don't fire good people.
So my next question, obviously, who is the one person you can point to that had the most influence on your life? I think you just answered that question. Must have been your mom.
I mean, my mom was incredibly influential, and probably my second book could have just been everything my mother taught me, and I made a ton of money off of it. Alzie Jackson was a hat maker in Philly who was like a father to me. You know, I grew up in a single-parent home. He was a Black, really creative, big, big man. He was a chef in a kitchen, a camp that I worked in for all my high school and college days, and he was the one who really had a huge influence on me really growing up, pointing me in the right direction. You know, he used to just call me white boy and he'd pick me up. He could pick me up with his hand. He grabbed my head and pick me up. That's how big he was. So he was very intimidating, but an incredibly soft soul and a great mentor and teacher. And he was really the one that really brought the leadership out in me, taught me how to manage people, taught me what was important about managing people, and also pointed me and really pushed me to go to college and why I should go to college. So, you know, he really, and he gave me a trait that was a great plan B. So here I am killing myself. But if everything went bad, I'd always be somebody who could work in a kitchen, cook, and work my way through. He really was a tremendous mentor in every way. And the most important thing he did was on my first date with my wife, which I was going to blow off, my wife on that in camp. I kind of, there's no way this girl's going to want to go out with me. I was supposed to meet her at this Playboy club, which was near the camp. And he answered the phone with my girlfriend at the time, well, this girl I was going to take out called. And he said, well, Brandon's supposed to be here. And he says, well, he's up in his room. Let me go check. So when he called me, he goes, Brandon, you know, Mara's on the phone. She said she's meeting you at this club. Where are you? He goes, she's not going to want to hang out with me. And he's like, white boy, get your butt up there. You go pick up a bottle of wine on your way. You really kick my ass. And then, you know, that's the reason why I went to that Playboy club. And that was my first date with my wife, who I ended up marrying. And I mean, wow. What can you say, you know?
Wow. I got to tell you, this is so funny because when I first met my wife, somebody gave me her name, you know, whatever, they wanted to set us up. I called her up and she didn't sound really appealing on the phone, so to speak. But, I said, all right, so what are you doing next week? Whatever. And she said, no, nothing, whatever. I says, okay, so let's go out. You know, I'll pick you up, whatever. And the day of the date, I'm looking at, I'm thinking to myself, man, I just don't want to do this. This is not something I want to do. You know, I actually called my sister and I said, you know, I have this date. I really don't want to go on the date. What should I do? She goes, Ari, just go out. Worst case scenario, you have a nice dinner and that's it. And then you bring her home, you know, and it's all over and that's it. I'm like, okay. I show up at her door and as God is my witness, I ring the bell and this literally, I thought she was a goddess. I mean, she was like the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. And I couldn't get beyond the fact that this face was the same person on the phone. And I looked at her and I said, Joyce? And she goes, yeah. I went like, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, did I strike it here? And we went out and I think 6 or 8 weeks later, we were engaged. You know?
Wow. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Listen, Brandon, you know, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You've got a lot of good, advice for my audience. I've watched your videos. I've watched you. You're an incredible individual. So let me just ask you one last thing. I know you're involved in different charities and the like. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, to get involved with one of your charities or something like that, what would be the best way for them to do that? Is there a website or?
I mean, yeah, to find out more information, I'm at, BrandonSteiner.com, but you can get one of my books for free on Collectible Exchange or CXStuff.com. Just pay for the shipping. I'm giving away the books free and through the end of April. But, you know, what's funny is I get behind with so many different charities. So when you follow me on social, I really diversify the things that I try to get behind because besides putting some money behind things, I feel like I always have a marketing edge. And a big part of my new company, Collectible Exchange, is about doing more good. I've been really blessed and I'm very grateful for the support and the fandom that has come my way towards my brand and some of my crazy, stupid ideas, selling dirt, selling bricks, selling autographs. But, you know, I really want to take that and make more good out of it, not necessarily more money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm in business to make money, but I'm taking a big part of my initiative is to do more on my Facebook. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And let me know if there's anything I can do.
Brandon,
happy to pop on with you.
Thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. It was truly an eye-opener and good luck going forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day. Stay
you
blessed.
You too. You okay. too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Schoenbrunn. Until next time, listen to the whispers, never give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.